And now, live from Tribune Tower, Chicago, this is the WGN Radio Theater with Carl Amari.
Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
Yes, it's Maxwell House Coffee Time, starring George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you escape.
It's time once again for another comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Countdown for blastoff. X minus one.
Richard Diamond, private detective.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly.
Kraft presents The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah.
All right, about 9 minutes after 11 p.m. here on a Sunday night, January 22nd, 2017. This is program 148 in the WGN Radio Theater series. I'm your host, Carl Amari, to my right. The improving health-wise, Lisa Wolf. What's up, Lisa?
Hi, Carl. How are you?
Yeah, you sound much better.
I feel much better. Thank
you.
Wow.
Got some sleep?
I sure did.
Yeah, you look
good.
I
followed everyone's advice.
Yeah, you look pretty good. And in the booth, Elif Garris, who is not sick.
I'm not sick, but, and Lisa, even if you're not sick, I brought you 3 zinc tablets.
Wow, that was very sweet.
Thank you. I brought you an orange lemon.
A lemon orange. Ooh, I'm excited.
That's so this is some new hybrid fruit.
It is. It's a lemon and an orange together. It tastes like closer to a lemon than an orange.
Did they meet on Match.com?
Could be.
Yeah. All right. Very good. So I'm looking forward to having a lemon orange.
Oh, I didn't say I brought one for you. I said I brought one for Ella.
Okay. Well,
but I might have brought one for you.
On this edition of the WGN Radio Theater, it's The Life of Riley, starring William Bendix as Riley, The Fat Man, starring J. Scott Smart, and then Escape with Jeff Chandler, all brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop. Brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actor stars in the upcoming TV series Detroiters about best friends who make low-budget commercials in the city of Detroit.
The number to call, 312-981-7200. What do they win?
Lou Malnati's gift certificate for $25.
All right, here's a hint. This actor played Kurt in Horrible Bosses.
Ooh, easy, easy. We don't want to use real names if we're using code name, Dale.
All right, who is that actor? 312-981-7200. We'll find our winner after this break.
And welcome back. This is the WGN Radio Theater Show 148. We are playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play it one more time.
Ooh, easy, easy. We don't want to use real names if we're using code name, Dale.
Hey, we have Dave on the line. How are you, Dave?
Good.
We got
you.
I'm great. So do you recognize that actor?
That would be Jason Sudeikis.
Jason Sudeikis is right, and you are a winner. Oh, ding, ding, ding. We are, you're an extra winner. We got a little bell in here tonight, so Carl's having a little fun over there. You have won a Lou Malnati's gift certificate for $25, home of Chicago's.
I'm easily entertained.
I know that. Best deep dish pizza, sounding delicious right about now. Find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations. You can order online at loumalnatis.com. And thanks so much, Dave, for calling in and listening. We appreciate your support.
Thank you.
Thanks,
Dave. All right, it's time for our first classic radio show for this Sunday evening. It's The Life of Riley, starring William Bendix as Riley. It was a comedy created by Irving Brecker. It premiered on radio in 1944. Now, Riley was an airplane riveter and devoted family man, and his wife was Peg. He had 2 kids, Babs and Junior, and his catchphrase was, "What a revolting development this is." He said it just like that, Lisa.
You sound pretty good.
I might
You've heard
him
it once or twice.
Just a couple times.
Yeah.
John Brown was his co-worker, Jim Gillis. He also played the town's friendly undertaker, Digby Odell. And in 1949, it came to television starring Jackie Gleason. And then after that, 6 seasons, Bendix resumed the role. We have a radio episode for you now from October 20th, 1950. This is called The Collection Agency, part 1 now of The Life of Riley.
Internationally famous Pabst Blue Ribbon, finest beers served anywhere, proudly presents The Life of Riley, starring William Bendix as Riley. And And now, The Life of Riley. It's 6 o'clock in the evening, and Chester A. Riley is arriving at his home in a somewhat unusual manner. Panting heavily, he runs down the street toward his house. And as he approaches the picket fence surrounding his lawn, without changing his pace, he hurdles it in one mighty leap. He dashes across the lawn, bounds up the porch steps, throws open the front door, hurls himself into the hallway, slams the door behind him, locks and bolts it.
Pop, what's the matter? The door.
He'll never get in. I used the master padlock. Don't answer it, Junior.
Why not?
Shh. Don't make a sound.
What's the matter, Pop?
Is your mother home?
No.
That's a break.
What's going on?
They're after me. They followed me all the way from the plant. Once they get their hands on your throat, they never let go.
Who?
The collection agency. They've been hounding me for months.
Why?
For no good reason. Just because I owe them money.
You better open it, Pop.
He'll go away.
He knows you're in here. He saw you.
Yeah, all right. I had better get rid of him before your mother gets home. I don't want her to know about this. Listen, Junior, I'll hide in the living room here. You open the door and say I'm out of town. Tell him I'm out of town for the weekend. I went to Africa. Tell him anything, but get rid of him.
Oh, Pop, I can't lie.
What do you mean you can't lie? You've been practicing enough.
Oh, I just can't.
Is this how I brought you up? To turn on me when I'm trapped like a rat? Now you do like I say.
He won't believe me anyway.
He'll believe you if you lie real good. You've got a nice, honest face. Now, do like I say. Go on. I'll hide in here.
Okay.
Good evening, Sonny. Tell your father I'd like to see him.
He's not in.
Sure?
Sure. He's in Africa.
Africa, huh? Who told you to say that?
My father. I mean...
Now, look, Sonny, there's no use lying to me. I saw him come in. Now, you tell him I'm here.
Oh, hey, wait a minute. You can't come in
now,
here.
Now, look, Sonny.
Now, just a minute. You heard what the kid said. Beat it.
I want to talk to you, Riley. I'm from the Gold Coast Collection Agency.
Well, I don't have anything to do with you.
You're Riley, aren't you?
Which one?
What do you mean, which one?
Me or my twin brother.
Your twin brother?
Yeah, Chester. He went to Africa. Come back in a couple of months.
Now, look, Riley, you ain't fooling me. You owe a balance of $42 for an oil painting, and if you don't pay...
I don't know nothing about no oil painting. Now, come on,
Riley, I'm warning you.
When my brother comes back from Africa, I'll have to get in touch
with you. So if you know what's good for you...
Those guys sure got their nerve hounding an honest citizen day and night, insulting me.
Oh, then you don't owe them any money.
Well, of course I do. That's no reason to call me a deadbeat.
Well, how long you owing?
Just a couple of days, over 2 years.
What did you want with an oil painting?
Well, this here artist paints oil portraits for $50, and mother's birthday was coming up, and I figured she'd like to hang it over the mantel, so I ordered one.
Of Mom?
No, of me.
Where's the painting?
I never took it. It didn't look like me at all. Boy, was it homely. I lost my $8 deposit, and then the artist put this Gold Coast Collection Agency onto me.
Why don't you pay up, Pop?
$50? Nothing doing. If your mother ever found out I blew $50 on an oil painting, she'd hang me over the mantle.
You're going out tonight, aren't you?
Yes, Babsy. Well, hurry up, Riley. We'll be late for the movie.
I don't see why you're so anxious to go to the movies all of a sudden. I asked you to go last night and you didn't want to. Why tonight all of a sudden?
Because Babs's boyfriend is coming over.
Pipe down, you little stool pigeon.
I'm no stool pigeon.
You are so.
He is not.
If I wanted to be a stool pigeon, there's plenty I could squeal about. Right, Pop?
Pipe down, you little stool pigeon.
Oh, cut it out.
Riley, if we're going...
Wait a minute. Don't rush me. Who's this boy that's coming over tonight?
Dick Franklin. Boy I met at school.
Yeah, well, I don't know if I like the idea of you being here all alone with a boy you hardly know.
Oh, for heaven's sake, Daddy. He's been dating me 3 nights a week for the last 2 months.
3 nights a week. Well, how come I don't know about this?
Well, if you'd take a little more interest in your children...
I don't like this. 3 nights a week. It sounds like you're serious.
Well, I am serious.
You might as well go steady with him.
I am going steady with him.
Peg, do you hear that? I suppose next she'll be telling us she's getting engaged.
Well, we're thinking of it.
What?
Oh, Riley, she's just talking. Just because a boy takes her out...
Yeah, when I took you out 20 years ago, I was just talking. Look where we are now. I'm practically a grandfather, and I haven't even been invited to the wedding.
Riley, are you coming?
Yeah, in a minute. First, I want to meet this here Sam.
Dick.
Yeah, and find out a few things about him.
Oh, Daddy, no.
Well, what's the matter? You ashamed of me?
Oh, that's ridiculous.
Of course it is.
Your mother wasn't ashamed to have me meet her father. And I wasn't nearly as charming as I am now.
Or as polished. Oh, that's Dick.
Fine. You show him into the living room, and then I'll come in. As soon as I find my shoes.
Dick, this is my father. Daddy, this is Dick Franklin.
Well, I'm pleased to meet you.
How do you do, sir?
Pleased to meet you.
Yeah.
Daddy, if you're going to the movies...
Oh, there's no hurry. They're keeping the popcorn hot for me. Well, how's college?
Oh, fine, sir.
Dick's studying medicine.
Oh, learning how to cut up people, eh?
Well, I got a long way to go before I do that. Right now, I'm busy wrestling with anatomy.
Whose anatomy?
Oh, Daddy.
You a Los Angeles boy?
No, I'm from San Francisco.
Oh, Frisco, eh? Your father a doctor up there?
No, he's in business.
Oh, he got his business up there?
Well, the head office is there, but actually his business is spread all over the country. They have 1,000 branches.
1,000? Hey, that's just not bad. Even if he only makes $1 a week profit on each branch, it's 1,000. Well, son, it's certainly been a pleasure meeting you. Drop in anytime, anytime. Well, good night. Have a good time, kids. And don't worry about us. We won't be home until late. Good night.
Good night,
Mr. Riley.
Peg.
Well, are you through with the cross-examination?
Peg, this boy's okay.
Oh, I'm glad to see you approve of one of boys Babs' boyfriends for a change.
I got no objection to her having a boyfriend as long as he's the right type of boy, you know. A boy with character, brains, ambition, initiative, and... And a rich father.
Oh, he's got a rich father.
Mm-hmm.
Did you examine his bank account?
I don't have to. The old man's got a business with 1,000 branches all over the country.
1,000 branches? Yeah. What kind of business?
Hey, I didn't ask him that. Yeah, well, it must be a bank. Bank of America, maybe. Who else has 1,000 branches? Oh, you know, it's hard to believe. Little Babs Riley of the Brooklyn Rileys going steady with the son of a banker. You know, Peg, I believe girls should marry young.
Well, I don't. An hour ago, you were screaming your head off because Babs was dating this boy. Now you can't wait to get her married off.
Well, you got to think of the future.
Babs's or yours?
Well, ours, too. Let's face it, Peg, I'll never be rich. Our only chance is if Babs makes a good marriage. After all, we ain't as young as we used to be. We're getting on.
You mean... getting on.
Oh. Oh, Peg, you're no chicken. After all, you're close to 40.
I'm only 35.
You're at least 39.
I'm not quite 37.
All right, so you're 38. So why do you object to Babs marrying at 18? If you're 38, you must have married me when you were 10.
No wonder you'll never be rich. You can't even add.
10 plus 18.
Oh, now, I don't want to hear any more of this silly talk about Babs getting married. Now, come on, are you taking me to the movies or not?
Okay, let's go. I can't talk in his own house. It's supposed to be a free country. Not for married men, it ain't.
Come on, we'll miss the feature picture.
Now, wait a minute.
Get away from that living room.
I just want to go in for a minute. Something I want to ask Dick.
Oh, Riley, please.
Oh,
funny, Dick.
Oh, it's a riot, Babs.
Well, Daddy, I thought you had gone with Mother.
Oh, yeah, we're on our way. Oh, say, Dick, what did you say the name of your father's bank was?
Bank?
Yeah.
My father doesn't have a bank.
Oh, well, I thought maybe I'd help him out, you know, throw my business to one of his branches.
Oh, I hope you never have business with Dad. He runs the Gold Coast Collection Agency.
Gold Coast Collection Agency?
Yeah, you may have heard of him.
Good night. What a revolting development this is.
You know, just heard the first act of The Life of Riley, starring William Bendix as Riley.
All right, there you have it. First portion of The Life of Riley, and that's William Bendix as Chester A. Riley, Paula Winslow as Peg, from October 20th, 1950. We'll get back to that in just a few minutes. All right, we're back. This is the WGN Radio Theater. I'm your host, Carl Amari. 11:35. Thanks for staying up with us. We'll be here till 2 o'clock in the morning. Lisa's well on her way to a full recovery over here. She had a little bit of a cold yesterday.
I did. I slept most of the day, and I feel great.
All right. Well, I'm glad you're feeling better.
Thank you.
And I have the conclusion to The Life of Riley for you now. Let's go back to October 20th, 1950. Here's William Bendix as Chester Riley in The Life of Riley.
And now back to The Life of Riley, starring William Bendix as Riley with Paula Winslow and John Brown. Life has gone on. We find Babs' romance with Dick flourishing.
Mother,
Babs, are you and Dick still here? I thought he's taking you out to dinner tonight.
Well, he is, but there's been a change. I mean, he wants you and Daddy to come along, too.
Tonight?
Yes. Dick's father got in from San Francisco today, and he's got to have dinner with him, and he said, would I mind? And I said, no. And then he said, would you and Daddy like to come along, too, and meet his father at the hotel?
Well, I guess Dick is serious.
I guess so. You'll come, won't you, Mother?
Oh, I don't know, dear.
Well, you like Dick, don't you?
Well, yes.
Well, doesn't Daddy like him?
Oh, yes. This is one boy he approves of.
Well, then what's wrong?
Well, I haven't got a thing to wear.
Oh, Mother, don't be silly. Your blue dress with the rhinestones is perfectly all right. I'll go and tell Dick. We have to be there at 7:30.
Peg!
Well, there's Daddy.
Oh, hello, Peg. Supper ready, I could eat a wolf.
Daddy, hurry and get dressed. We're all going out to dinner.
No, nothing doing. I want to eat home.
We're being treated, dear.
Where's my new suit? Who's treating us?
Dick, his father's in town. He wants us to meet him.
I ain't going.
But Riley!
And you ain't going. And Babs ain't going. What? Nobody's going.
Daddy, don't shout. Dick will hear you. He's in the living room.
Well, get him out of here before I throw him out.
Are you crazy?
I don't want Babs to have anything to do with him or his father.
But why? Why?
Well, never mind why. I got good reasons. You tell that boy you're through with him.
What's the matter with you anyway? Only yesterday you were drooling over his father's branches.
Well, that was yesterday. Tomorrow I may be hanging from one of them.
Talking about?
I ain't going. I have made up my head.
Oh. Stop acting ridiculous. You never even met the man.
No, and I never intend to. Not as long as I can keep my twin brother in Africa.
Your twin brother?
Yeah.
In Africa?
Yeah.
Oh, Mother.
Riley, dear.
What's the matter?
Here's a nice
couch. Now, wait
couch.
A minute. Don't push.
Down,
no,
dear.
No. You think I'm crazy, huh? But I know what I'm talking about. I got reasons.
Then tell me what they are.
Oh, I ain't that crazy.
Now, listen, Riley. I've stood all I'm going to. You're going to this dinner, so you might as well make up your mind to it.
Now, look, Peg. I had a hard day, and I don't want no arguments. Besides, I ain't hungry.
You just said you could eat a wolf.
Okay, but I meant home cooked. I ain't going.
Come back here.
Guy hounds me for months, sends his leeches after me, won't leave me alone, and she wants me to have dinner with him yet. If he finds out I'm my twin brother, I'm dead.
Oh, there. Glad I ran into you.
Oh, it's you.
Yes, it is I indeed. Digby O'Dell, the friendly undertaker.
Well, you came to the right place.
Your dear spouse said you'd be out here in the backyard. She asked me to tell you to come into the house.
Oh, she did, huh? The only way she'll get me in the house is to carry me in.
Now I see why she asked me. What's wrong, dear Chuck?
Oh, she wants me to go to dinner with Babs and her boyfriend to meet the boy's father, and I don't want to go.
Why not?
Well, I... Oh, no, no. You tell it around.
Perish the thought.
You come in contact with a lot of people.
The people I come in contact with will never repeat it, believe me.
Well, okay. Did you ever hear of the Gold Coast Collection Agency?
Oh, yes, they're a big concern. I use them myself occasionally.
You do?
Oh, yes. In my business, I run into quite a few deadbeats. But one nice thing about my line, even if I lose money in every deal, I always operate in the black.
Well, this agency's been after me for months. Peg don't know. And I found out the boy's father runs this outfit.
Oh, I begin to understand.
Leeches, that's what they are. Hound you night and day, drag you to court. If you don't pay, they put you away.
It's different in my business. No pay, no put away.
Besides, what'll happen if I go there and this guy recognizes me? All I need is for Peg to find out.
Oh, Riley, how could he recognize you? Oh. You're just a name in a file. He's the head of a big company with thousands of employees. He doesn't bother with the actual collecting.
Hey, that's right. I never thought of that. Sure. Maybe I better go. Peggy's getting suspicious.
Then hurry. Don't let the grass grow over your feet.
Okay, I'll go. Gee, Digger, why can't I think these things out for myself? You're always getting me out from under.
That's more than I do for most people. Well, cheerio. I'd better be shoveling off.
More coffee, anybody?
Oh, no, thanks, Mr. Franklin.
Mrs. Riley?
No, thank you.
Mr. Riley?
Well, I'll have another cup if you insist. Mm-hmm.
There you are, Mr. Riley. How about a cigar to go with it?
Well, if you say so, Mr. Franklin. Thanks.
Well, you seem more relaxed now, Mr. Riley. You know, when you first got here, you seemed quite tense.
Well, I had a very nervous day, riveting over a hot airplane.
Dick, would you call room service and tell them to come and get the table?
Right, Dad.
Oh, my, this is a lovely suite. Are you going to be in town long, Mr. Franklin?
No, just a few days. I came down to check up on our local office. Collections have been falling off badly.
Well, I guess you can't collect from every guy, huh?
Oh, yes, you can.
You can?
That's the theory I operate on. That's how I built this business up out of nothing. Why, in the old days, when I was doing the actual collecting, there was no such thing as a delinquent account. And we didn't have to go to court either. Of course, we can't use the same tricks today. It's illegal.
Tricks? What kind of tricks?
Well, suppose you owed a bill, Riley.
Me? That's a hot one. I pay my bills. I mean...
No, let's just suppose.
Daddy, Mr. Franklin's just giving a hypothetical example.
Oh.
Riley, you're flicking ashes in your coffee.
Huh? I thought it was sugar.
Here's the sugar, dear.
Oh, thanks.
All right. You refuse to pay. We send you a few letters. You ignore them. We call at your house. You won't let us in the door. And then...
You shadow me to my job and threaten to tell my boss.
That's right. How did you know?
Well, I
dear, watch what you're doing with that lump sugar.
Well, I'm only putting it in the coffee.
Well, take the paper off first.
I just don't like my coffee too sweet.
Well, to continue, nothing seems to work. We can't get a cent out of you. Not even a threat of court action. All right, now we play our trump card. To force you to pay up.
I know. You pull my nails out with pliers.
One fine morning, you look out the window. You see a sound truck outside your house with loudspeakers pointing in every direction. We ring your doorbell and we give you one last chance. We say to you, Riley, are you going to pay up?
No.
All right. We switch on the machine. The next thing everybody in your neighborhood hears is, Riley is a deadbeat! He doesn't pay his bills! Riley is a deadbeat!
Turn it off! I'll pay! I'll pay!
Excuse me, I got carried away.
My husband's been working very hard lately. He is a little tense.
I'm a nervous wretch.
Ah, you'd pay up all right. Of course, we can't pull that kind of stunt today. The law.
Oh, gee, what a shame.
Daddy, you're stirring your coffee with your cigar.
Well, the cigar's a little dry.
Oh, my. It sounds like fascinating business, Mr. Franklin.
Oh, it is. It is. The thing I like about it is you learn a lot about human nature. You'd be surprised at the excuses these deadbeats think up for not paying their bills.
Oh, I'll bet they're weird.
Oh, weird isn't the word for it. Hey, I'll show you. Where's my briefcase?
There it is, Dad.
Thanks. I've got some typical cases in here. The local office sent them up this afternoon. Supposed to be our worst cases. Absolutely uncollectible. I had my doubts and I wanted to check. I haven't had a chance to look at them yet. Well, let's see now. Here. Let's take this one here. The amount is $42.
$42.
Over 2 years now for an oil painting. Now let's see some of his excuses. Here we are. This is a Lulu. 30 years in the business, but I've never come across one like this. This fella claims he doesn't owe anything. It's his twin brother who just left for Africa.
Africa?
It could happen. Lots of guys go hunting in Africa.
Oh, come now, Riley. Hunting snails? Oh,
take another file. After all, it's only $42.
Oh, no. Oh. Let's hear more about this one. It sounds so ridiculous.
Well, if you're really interested.
Yeah, but it's getting late, Peg. Maybe
we've... Oh, it's only 9.
All right, let's see now. Now, listen to this. November 1st, he said he can't pay because his wife is expecting a baby. November 7th, he said his wife just had the baby. November 15th, he said he's getting married, needs money for a honeymoon.
Who is this character, Dad?
Well, his name is, let's see, it must be on the folder here.
Oh, excuse me, I'm so sorry. It was stupid of me to spill my coffee like that. Did I stain your suit?
No, just on the folder.
Oh, well. Here, let me mop it up.
Oh, that's all right, Riley. Here's the name. I can't quite make it out. It's kind of blurred.
Yeah, well, I must have smeared it when I wiped up the coffee.
Well, here, can you make out this name, Riley?
Huh? Well, Kosiowski?
No, I don't think that's it.
Clydenfruger?
No.
Smith.
Well, it doesn't matter.
I don't think you'll ever collect from this bird, Dad.
Well, it's not the money, it's the principle. Frankly, I don't know what to do about it.
Well, I'll tell you what I'd do.
Oh, what's that?
I'd forget all about it.
Huh?
Why keep hounding the poor guy? Did you ever stop to think the reason he don't pay is maybe he just ain't got the money? Maybe he's got a wife and a couple of kids to support, and he can't do it on his salary. Maybe he used up all his savings to get his boy's teeth straightened. Or maybe he wants to buy his wife some new clothes, so she won't have to wear that same crummy blue dress with the rhinestones every time she goes out. Sure, he makes phony excuses, but that's because he's too stupid to think of good ones. So if you want to know what I'd do, I'll tell you what I'd do. I'd tear up this file like this.
Well, look, you can't...
In 1,000 pieces. But... There.
Riley, don't.
Oh, you shouldn't have done that, Riley. It's the only copy we have.
It's lucky for you I did. How would you be able to live with yourself if you keep hounding this poor, sweet guy? Till one day he can't stand it no more. He goes home, takes a gun, and the next thing you know, his brains are splattered all over the living room.
Oh, he wouldn't do that.
Maybe not, but his wife would.
Yeah, and take it from me, she's the girl that can do it. Sure. I still don't see what you're sore about. Now, go to sleep.
Well, you had no business throwing away $50 on an oil painting in the first place.
Oh.
And in the second place, the way you behaved with Mr. Franklin, Babs will never forgive you.
I don't see what she's sore about. What else could I do?
Oh, the poor child was so embarrassed. Well,
she'd have been a lot more embarrassed if Franklin had found out I was the guy in the file. Anyway, what's the difference? Dick took her out again tonight. He's so crazy about her, he'd still go for her even if I had two heads. What are you looking at me like that for?
I was just...
Pabst Blue Ribbon invites you to join us again next week to hear The Life of Riley, starring William Bendix as Riley. The script is by Reuben Shipp and Alan Lipscott. Music by Lou Kosloff. Mrs. Riley is Paula Winslow. Digger O'Dell is John Brown. Babs is Barbara Eiler. Junior is Bobby Ellis. Franklin is Lou Merrill. And Dick is Gil Stratton, Jr. The Life of Riley is produced by Irving Brecker. The Life of Riley is brought to you by the Pabst Brewing Company of Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and sent your way with the best wishes of Pabst Blue Ribbon dealers from coast to coast. See you next week. Jimmy Wallington speaking.
This is Riley again. Bill Stern's next on NBC.
That is The Life of Riley with William Bendix. This is Riley, October 20th, 1950. The Collection Agency. Hope you enjoyed that. That was originally heard on the NBC Radio Network, sponsored by Pabst Blue Ribbon Beer. Let's take a quick break. Then Lisa and I and Elif Garris will be right back. All right, hour two of the WGN Radio Theater. I'm your host, Carl Amari. Lisa Wolf over here to my right, Elif Garris in the booth. And we have an episode of The Fat Man coming your way this hour. Then in our next hour, Lisa, it's Escape. But you know what? Interestingly enough, this Escape broadcast we're going to play, which is a very popular episode called Snake Doctor, it stars Jeff Chandler. But before Jeff Chandler changed his name to Jeff Chandler, because that was not what he was born with, his name was Ira Grossell. And they say starring Ira Grossell, but it's really...
Yeah,
nobody
guy.
Would know who Ira Grossell is. Of course, Roger would probably know because Roger knows all this stuff. But Jeff Chandler stars in this episode, but they never call him Jeff Chandler in it. Yeah?
Yeah.
That's like when I called you Lucy Wolf the other day.
Lucy, but I like the name Lucy.
Called you Lucy Wolf.
Lucy. It's like the Peanuts gang. Lucy.
You know, those were great cartoons, weren't they?
I know.
Growing up, I used to actually look so forward to the Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown.
I did too.
And I'd be like, oh, it's on tomorrow. And I'd be so excited.
It was like the Valentine's
special.
And I
saw them over
special.
And over and over growing
I
up.
Know,
but I still
too.
Just thought they were the best, you know, those cartoons.
They were.
I liked Rocky and Bullwinkle too.
I liked Rocky and Bullwinkle.
Yeah.
That was back in the 60s.
June Ferre did a lot of those voices. And then we interviewed her for the show.
That
she was great.
That was a long time ago.
Yeah. Those were the days.
Yeah.
Okay, well, Fat Man coming your way in this hour, brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actor stars in the upcoming TV series Great News about a news producer whose overbearing mother re-enters the workforce as an intern.
All right.
And the winner gets a Lumel Nottis gift certificate for $25 to have a great pizza.
And here's a hint. You should eat the pizza, not the gift certificate.
Either way, I don't know.
312-981-7200. That's a number. Here's a hint. He played Hagrid from Harry Potter in the Saturday Night Live sketches.
Yikes! What happened? Take it out of my brain! Take it out!
Who is that actor? 312-981-7200. We'll find our winner after this break.
And we're back and playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play that clip again.
Yikes! What happened? Take it out of my brain! Take it out!
Who picked that clip? That's a weird clip. Anyway, we had a caller that we took offline, Linda from Highland Park 1, and she knew that that was Horatio Sands. So congratulations to Linda. She has won a Lou Malnati's gift certificate for $25, home of Chicago's best and most delicious deep dish pizza. Find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations and order online at loumalnati's.com. Thank you again, Linda, and let's play the fat man. Let's play the fat man, as you call it.
I've been saying that. I don't think this is politically correct to call him the fat man.
It's not, and that's what makes this so good.
You know, and I'm so politically.
You are so unpolitically
I'm so
correct.
PC.
That is,
you know,
ridiculous.
That, Lisa. I'm majorly PC.
Well, I'm happy that it's not.
And so we're playing the oversized man.
Yeah.
The husky man. Yeah, he's very husky. And this was a detective created especially for radio by Dashiell Hammett. You know, he was better known for having created the Sam Spade and the Thin Man. But in 1946, ABC convinced Hammett to create a detective especially for radio. And so his overweight detective, the Fat Man, was born, Brad Runyon. He weighed 237 pounds, but despite his size, he did pretty well with the ladies. Yeah.
Yeah,
he was quite the ladies' man. He didn't sit on him, though.
That
was good.
That would not be good.
Jack Scott Smart, who outweighed his character by 30 pounds in real life. Yeah, he was 267 pounds, starred as Runyon. And because of Hammett's communist ties, the show had trouble holding on to a sponsor. It was canceled in 1951. Yeah, Hammett was found on the, on those communist,
newspapers
like,
and things?
Stuff like that. Like he was a sympathizer for the communists.
So this
particular episode is sponsored by Buick, and it's from January 17th, 1951. It's called The Nightmare Murder. This stars J. Scott Smart. Here's part one of The Fat Man.
Here comes The Fat Man. In The Nightmare Murder, starring J. Scott Smart, and presented by your local Buick dealer, who invites you to be on hand this Saturday, January 20th, when he introduces for the first time anywhere the smartest car of the year, the new 1951 Buick. Remember the date, this Saturday, January 20th, the new 51 Buick.
There he goes. He's stepping on the scales. Weight, 237 pounds. Fortune, danger. Who is it?
The Fat Man. It takes a good man to make a first-class old-fashioned. You have to muddle the sugar, bitters, and water properly, then toss in the ice and whiskey, and then carefully twist a lemon peel on top. Like anything else, it's simply a matter of following the recipe. But here's another illustration. If you take a liberal jigger of motive, add a slice of opportunity and a dash of means, and then pile a dozen or more old-fashions on top of this, you're quite likely to end up with a real gruesome hangover. Murder. Like any solid, normal, routine job, this one began in my office. It was just after lunch. My feet were on the desk. I was munching a peppermint. I'd propped the latest edition just south of the bulge that marked the last resting place of a brace of breaded pork chops when the phone rang. Runyon speaking.
The detective?
That's a debatable point, but I like to think so. Who's this?
My name's George Dutton. Maybe you've heard of me.
Oh, you mean the author?
Well, that's a debatable point, too. I write mystery stories.
Yes, I know. About private eyes who get hit on the head.
Look, I've never had any need for a private eye. I don't even know what one looks like. I never even saw a pistol or a gangster or a corpse until last night. A corpse, that is.
Wait a minute. Let's take this in sequence. Are you hiring me?
Maybe. How much?
$50 in expenses.
Well, that's a lot, but I need you pretty badly.
What's the trouble?
I killed a girl last night. I want you to prove it.
Say that again and slower.
You better come down here right away.
Where are you?
Melville Hospital. Alcoholic ward.
The closest I'd ever been to the alcoholic ward at Melville was reading The Lost Weekend. After I convinced them I wasn't a prospective client, they gave me some of the dope on George Dutton. Their assumption was his writer's imagination had picked up an Italian collaborator during the period in question, namely a batch of martinis.
Runyon?
Yeah, what can I do for you, George?
Sit down. On the bed. Now take it easy, will you? My head.
I know what you mean. Is that better?
Yeah. Now look. You're going to think I'm crazy like the rest of them, but I'm not paying you for an opinion. Here. Here's 2 days' worth, $100.
Thanks. Now, for this, I'm supposed to hang a murder rap on you, huh? Or did I hear it right over the phone?
You did. At least I'll know, Runyon, if it happened, if I killed her. At least I'll know I'm not crazy.
All right,
anything's
George.
Better than that kind of doubt, Runyon. Anything.
Now, take it easy, George. Just tell me about it, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, I know. Calm, collected, lucid, logical, right? Yeah. Okay. I've been working hard, see? Trying to meet my publisher's deadline on a novel. I got tired last night around 7 and went to bed. Dead, wrung out, gone, you know? Well, this I'm sure of. Somewhere around 10 or 11 o'clock, I got up, put on my clothes, and went out for a walk around the block. I just turned the corner when it happened.
What?
I'd seen the car a lot in my neighborhood, a black Buick convertible. I'd seen the girl in it, too. Stunning girl, blonde, eyes like sapphires, figure like... Well...
Yeah, I know what you mean. So what?
So she pulled up to the curb and asked me to get in.
How come?
Well, am I so horrible? She did it, that's all.
Okay. Who was she?
I don't know. I don't know anything about her. She handed me a bottle, and that's how it started.
Mm-hmm. Mistake number one.
Yes, so right. So anyway, we drove around for a while, and I listened to her talk, and pretty soon the bottle was gone, so... She pulled out another one, and pretty soon that one was gone, too.
What'd she talk about?
Death?
Hmm?
Yeah. It seemed perfectly normal at the time. She was fascinated by death. Wrote poems about it, she said. Quoted from them all the time. Anyway, things got pretty fuzzy about then. I don't remember much. People, voices, lights. One thing, though, Runyon. One thing. There was a big red... rooster about 10 feet high.
Oh, yeah, naturally. Wouldn't be an evening without one. What was his
name?
Now,
wait a minute. A sign, Runyon, a neon sign. I remember it blinking at me while she stopped by the trash can.
What trash can?
How do I know what trash can? A trash can. There was the red rooster and the trash can, and she stopped and took something out of her purse and dropped it in. There were more lights and more people and more riding in the car. And then pretty soon we were alone. And she was pouring drinks for the two of us.
And where was this?
I don't know. You got me. She handed me a glass, see? And raised hers for a toast. To death, she said. And I saw she had a gun in her hand, pointing it at her head. I grabbed it, got a hold of it, but it went off.
Oh, great.
Last thing I remember was her lying on the floor, and then the floor was rushing up at me. Well, that's it.
What do you mean, that's it? What happened after that?
Nothing. When I opened my eyes, I was in my own bed, in my own apartment, with my clothes right where I'd left them at 7 the night before. A nightman swears I wasn't out of my room all night. Nobody believed me. They said I dreamed it. I had a couple more drinks, found the cop on the beat and told him, too. That's how I got here. They all think I'm crazy. Well, maybe I am. Maybe I am. But go on. Find out for me, Runyon. Get on it, will you? Get on it.
So I got on it. First, there was the janitor, George's apartment.
Listen, Mr. Runyon, I've been nightman here for 12 years. I know George Dutton as long as he lives here. He couldn't leave this building last night without me seeing him, and I didn't see him. You can take my word, he's nuts.
Then there was the bartender George had mentioned.
Look, all I know is he come in at an indecent hour this morning, screaming for the hair of the dog that bit him. Just like all the other times. Yeah, especially the last time.
What happened last time?
Oh, same thing, a couple of years ago. Only that night, he got out of bed and trapped Adolf Hitler in the information booth at Grand Central.
The cop who'd hauled him over to Melville said the same thing. Likewise, a couple of newsboys. Verdict, unanimous. George was a lush and a loony. And I was inclined to go along with him. On the theory that a special convertible, complete with blonde, is something even a New Yorker will stop and look at, I quizzed the service stations around George's apartment house. Sure enough, up comes a guy who'd greased its gold-plated chassis only a month before. The record showed it belonged to a Lydia Bradshaw at a Park Avenue address that went with the car, so I trotted over. Some kind of a soiree was going on in the huge living room. The butler looked at me, raised his eyebrows one at a time, and finally decided I wouldn't run off with the silver plate and hustle me into the library, which seemed to have another occupant.
As a spirit with yellow eyes gleaming, will I to thy couch come again?
Well, you say that smile. What is it?
This book, Baudelaire. Lousy translation. By the way, I'm Joan Cameron, Lydia's poor country cousin. Who are you? One of Uncle Charles' tribe of sycophants?
Oh, I'm not sure what that means, but I don't think so. My name's Brad Runyon.
Oh.
Where is Lydia, by the way?
Out somewhere. You looking for her?
Yeah.
Well, you're just in time. She and Uncle Charles are going abroad, you know, sailing tonight.
Oh, who's Uncle Charles?
Lydia's guardian. Keeper to the keys to the Bradshaw Exchequer.
Well, that sounds important.
It is.
Oh, and the chips, huh?
Oh, no. He just has a pair of scissors to clip the coupons for Lydia, which, incidentally, is a full-time job. Mm-hmm. And that concludes my dissertation on the Bradshaws, a morbid subject at best. Let's talk about you.
Sure, sweetheart. After we talk about a quick way I can get a hold of Uncle Charles.
I beg your pardon?
This friend is Uncle Charles.
That's pretty quick. How do you do, Mr. Bradshaw?
Ah, Mr. Runyon, isn't it?
It is. Now, if you'll excuse me.
Strange girl. Now, Mr. Runyon.
I've come on a peculiar errand, Mr. Bradshaw. When do you expect your niece Lydia back?
Oh, in an hour, perhaps two. Why?
I wonder if she'd consider making a short visit to Melville Hospital.
Melville? Good heavens, what for?
A client of mine thinks he killed her last night.
Now, just a minute. What kind of nonsense is this?
I know it sounds crazy, but it isn't nonsense. His name's George Dutton, and he's in the alcoholic ward. He fell off the wagon last night, but hard. He has seen your niece riding around her convertible. She impressed him. So, instead of the usual pink elephants, he had some hallucination about taking a ride with her last night and killing her. We can't talk him out of it.
Well, that's fantastic. What do you want Lydia to do about it?
Well, just stop by the hospital and convince him he's wrong, that's all.
But don't you understand we're sailing for Europe at midnight?
Now, look, this'll only take her 10 minutes. It may mean the man's sanity.
Well?
Otherwise, he's liable to be running around to the police and the newspapers.
Well, I'll ask Lydia to drop by.
Good, and thanks. I'll be running along, then. Sorry to trouble you, Mr. Bradshaw.
All right, that's the first portion of The Fat Man from January 17th, 1951, The Nightmare Murder, starring J. Scott Smart. Let's take a break, then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. Well, wake up. If you haven't, if you were dozing, that sure woke you up right there, right, Lisa?
Right, Carl.
It was like, boom. It was like...
You've been practicing your snoring over there.
It was like a slap to the face.
John Pickerson's
which
been
I've
snoring.
Had quite a few slaps to the face in my life.
I bet you have.
Because I'm not politically correct.
Yeah. I don't think that's why you got the slaps.
Yeah.
I think there might be other reasons.
Trying to think of... It could be.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Fat Man.
Okay,
let's
get back
to that.
That's
what we're listening. You want to listen to more of it?
I do.
All right. You do?
I do.
All right. January 17th, 1951. It's called The Nightmare Murder. Here's the conclusion to The Fat Man.
Well, what's the verdict, Runyon? You think I'm nuts now, too, huh?
George, listen. Listen. Now, hold of yourself. This doesn't mean you're nuts. Could happen, man.
Shut up. What was her name?
Lydia Bradshaw.
Bradshaw?
Yeah, and she's coming over here to see you.
Now listen, Runyon. You're working for me. See, you're not working for them.
Wait a minute, George.
You listen to me. I'm telling you this happened. I was there. I wasn't in bed dreaming it. This dame is dead. Do you understand that?
Shut up over there.
I won't shut up.
I'm telling you, kid, you'll go off your rocker.
Now, look, Doc, wait. Look, George. There's no use arguing about it. I talked to her uncle. The girl's coming here. That'll convince you, won't it?
She's not coming here because she's dead. She's dead. I held her with these two arms. I heard the gun go off. I felt her go limp in my arms. In my arms. Oh, no. No.
I'm sorry. George,
right over there.
I'm Lydia Bradshaw.
Well, what about it, George?
You're all right.
What do you mean, Mr. Dutton?
Last night we were together, don't you remember?
Well, no. Sorry, I don't. I don't remember ever seeing you before.
Go away. Go away.
Come on.
Isn't there anything I can do?
No, you may as well go now.
But the poor man...
You heard what he said. Now go on. Get out of here. Get out.
I'm terribly sorry.
Thanks very much, Miss Bradshaw.
I do hope you'll be all right.
Yeah. Good night.
Good night.
Well, George, is that the girl?
Yeah. That's the girl.
So that tied it up. I refunded him $50 of the $100 he gave me, recommended a good psychiatrist, and took off. It was after my dinner time, so I walked toward the East 50s, a little Italian restaurant that makes wonderful lasagna. Suddenly, I found myself looking across the street at a bar on the opposite corner with a blazing red rooster in neon lights. Of course, he could have dreamed this, too. In his heyday, he probably knew every pub in town. But the business of the trash can opposite the entrance, which was right where he said it was pretty accurate dreaming, even for a professional dreamer like George. For this reason, I decided to sacrifice my dignity. I sidled up to the trash can and began probing around. It was there. A slim volume in black Morocco with gold lettering on the cover reading Skyward, Poems in Praise of Death by Lydia Bradshaw. I kicked myself for refunding that $50. I stood for a minute in the glow of the red rooster sign and thumbed through the book of poems. Then I went into the bar.
Yes, sir. What do you have?
Make it a beer.
Any special kind?
Well...
How about a tall, cool glass of McCoy's Pale Ale?
That sounds like a commercial.
It is. See the sign up there? Don't let them fool you, brother. Reach for the real McCoy.
Okay, I'm sold. Draw one.
Right.
I quaffed my real McCoy and skimmed through Lydia's Odes to the Dark Angel. Tossing a Morocco-bound book into a trash can, it seemed a strange thing for a girl to do until you read the poetry, whereupon it became clearly the only thing to do. It was so awful, I gave up trying to read it and concentrated on the frontispiece, which, as with all privately printed works, was a picture of the author. Looking at it now, it seemed to me as if I'd seen Lydia Bradshaw somewhere before. Somewhere before she'd walked into George's room at the hospital. But I couldn't put my finger on it.
How about another real McCoy?
No, no. Wait a minute. Don't go away.
Yeah?
Were you here last night?
Sure. Why?
Here, take a look at this picture. You ever seen her?
Who is she?
Name's Lydia Bradshaw. Was she in here last night?
I don't know. Maybe, but I don't remember seeing her. She came in with the after-theater punch. I wouldn't remember anyway. Mobbing here four deep at the bar.
Why, Frank?
Huh? Oh, excuse me, I got...
Wait a minute, Frank. What do you mean you don't know Lydia?
Well, I didn't say that, Miss Cameron.
Frank?
I didn't say I don't know her. I only said I wouldn't remember if she was in here during rush hour last night. Excuse me, I got a customer waiting.
Customer, my foot. The liar. Oh, please don't think I'm dogging your footsteps, Mr. Runyon.
How do you happen to come here?
Always do.
You say he knows your cousin, Lydia Bradshaw?
He ought to. She owns the place. Tell me, did you steal that book from the library?
Oh, no. I picked it out of the trash can outside.
What?
Yeah, it scouts on her.
But it's the only one she has left. She'd die before she'd throw it away.
How about afterwards?
What do you mean?
No, just skip it. Here, look at this inscription on the flyleaf. To Greg, someday I'll find you. What does she mean by that?
Greg Stanhope. She used to think she was in love with him. Maybe she was, I don't know. But Uncle Charles decided it was wrong and broke it up. A fatal mistake, I might add.
Why fatal?
They found Greg the next day with a champagne glass in one hand and a gun in the other. He'd shot himself.
Hello, George?
Yeah?
This is Runyon.
What do you waste your time on me for, Runyon? I'm nuts, you know. I'm
now,
crazy.
Now, shut up, George. Take it easy. Answer me a couple of questions. You know anybody named Stanhope?
Greg Stanhope?
Yeah.
No, I never heard of him.
How did you happen to say Greg?
I don't know. It just popped into my head. Greg Stanhope. It goes together somehow. Greg... Wait a minute. I do know. Yeah, she was talking about him last night. That's who she toasted when she raised her glass just before she
Okay. Now, one more question, George. Did anyone see you leave the building last night?
Well, sure, the janitor.
Anyone else?
No.
Well, look, supposing it went like you said. Suppose someone picked you off the floor at the Bradshaw apartment and brought you home. Is there anyone who'd know exactly where to hang your clothes and straighten out the rest of your apartment besides you?
Sure, the janitor would, but he already told
you. He's got a couple of sidelines. George, as a writer, this may come as a disappointment to you, but you aren't nuts.
Listen, Mr. Runyon, get your foot out of my door before
I... Now, take it easy, pal. I'm coming in.
I already told you all I know about George Dutton.
That I'm inclined to doubt. Now sit down, pal. You've had a hard day pushing a broom and raking in cash.
You want I should call a cop? There's a law against breaking into a guy's apartment.
There's also a law against criminal conspiracy.
I said I give it to you this afternoon, all of it. Don't call me no criminal conspiracy because I'm janitor, no criminal, see?
How much did Charles Bradshaw pay you to tell me George wasn't out of his apartment last night?
I don't know nothing, I tell you. Now get out of here.
Now you come clean first. You saw George coming and going. You helped Bradshaw put him to bed last night.
No, I didn't. Honest, I didn't.
You better level with me, Buster, before
no.
I'd knock...
Don't come near me.
Someone had fired through the window and nailed the janitor before I could make him talk. I rushed over, opened the window, and hit the back alley in half a minute flat, but it was too late. The car roared off half a block away, and that was that. I walked back to where the killer must have stood, trying to make sense out of nonsense.
I'd run into my share of murders, but this was the first time in my book that someone committed one to cover up another one someone else had confessed to. Now, if that sounds confusing, it's only because it was. A party was going on three floors up. It was nice to know someone was having a good time because I wasn't. I leaned back against the wall and mopped my head. There had to be an answer somewhere. And it was lucky I'd leaned back or I would have been brained. A bottle whistled down three floors and glanced off my shoulder and bounced into some soft rubbish in the alley. I picked it up, looked at the label, and suddenly it hit me. It was an answer from out of the blue. "Don't let them fool you, brother," it said. "Reach for the real McCoy." I found a phone and called the hospital and left instructions for George. Then I hailed a cab and rushed over to Lydia Bradshaw's apartment. What time is it, Miss...
Bradshaw.
Yeah, Bradshaw.
It's almost 11. As I told you, Mr. Runyon, Uncle Charles is extremely busy taking care of the baggage and won't have time to talk to you before we sail.
Yeah, sure, I know. How come he forgot that trunk over there, Miss...
Bradshaw.
Yeah, Bradshaw. Having a tough time with that name. What about that trunk?
It's full of his first editions for the vault while we're gone.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's see. Where was I?
Will you stop reading that stupid book?
Stupid? Listen to this. Astride the cosmic threshold, I gazed back toward the old familiar lighted realm once more. Then resolute to turn my face the new way. Toward the wild, unlighted shore. Three guesses now. Byron, Keats, or Nick Annie?
I don't know and I don't care.
You ought to know, baby. You wrote it.
What do you mean, Mr. Runyon?
Poems in Praise of Death by Lydia Bradshaw. This mean anything to you?
It's an empty beer bottle, isn't it?
Yeah. Someone almost brained me with it tonight. McCoy's Pale Ale. Don't let him fool you, brother. Reach for the real McCoy. Still don't remember?
Should I?
Yeah. Took me a while, but I did. I wondered why you looked familiar to me.
Me?
Yeah. You two girls, two pictures. One of these girls is Lydia Bradshaw, Park Avenue debutante, and the other is a professional model. Which one is the real McCoy? It was an ad in all the magazines 3 years ago.
Figured out which is which by now, I presume.
Yeah. Why did you play along with him?
Is there any harm in it?
Well, I can think of about six laws you're breaking, not the least of which is criminal conspiracy.
Criminal? What are you...
Just a minute, Lydia. Stay where you are, both of you.
Oh.
My name's not Lydia. Let's stop the pretense.
Gonna make it a double header tonight, Uncle Charles?
I might.
Double what?
Murder.
Murder? What are you...
Shut up.
But murder... I didn't know anything about this. All you said was she'd killed herself and you wanted to avoid a scandal about suicide.
It was a scandal, all right, but not about suicide, was it, Uncle Charles?
But what was it?
When Lydia killed herself last night, it threw the whole estate into the hands of the executors, opened the books to the accountants. How much had you embezzled, Uncle Charles? A couple hundred G's, maybe?
More than that, Runyon. But you're wrong on a technicality. It's not a scandal, not unless it gets out. And it's not going to get out. I killed once. They can't do any more to me for two or three.
You can't cover it that way, Bradshaw.
No? Watch me, Runyon. Watch me.
But don't, Mr. Bradshaw, no.
Hey, Runyon. Runyon, this is the place.
George, you're just in time.
Huh? Who?
You've killed him.
No, but he's going to have quite a headache. The McCoy Company puts out a good bottle, too.
Got her?
It's two down. Put her on the sofa, George, while I call headquarters.
Yeah. Lydia Bradshaw.
No. This is the reasonably accurate facsimile. We'll find Lydia Bradshaw in that trunk over there.
Well, then I did kill her.
No, you didn't. She committed suicide, but her guardian didn't dare let it be known, or he'd have been discovered as an embezzler.
What do you mean?
Skip it for now. I need a drink. How about you?
Runyon, if it's all the same to you, I'll take sarsaparilla.
Tonight's thrilling story of the Fat Man was presented by your local Buick dealer.
The Fat Man, starring J. Scott Smart, was directed by Clark Andrews. The script was written by Harold Swanton. Heard on tonight's show were Lyle Sudrow as George Dutton and Gertrude Warner as Joan Cameron. The music was composed by Mark Winston. Your announcer, Don Lowe. Listen next week to another exciting adventure of the Fat Man. G-Note for Murder. This program came to you from New York. This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.
All right, that's the Fat Man, and I think we could call him the Fat Man. I mean, that's fine, right?
I like to be politically incorrect, so
right.
It's good.
Let's call him the Fat Man there. January 17th, 1951, The Nightmare Murder, starring J. Scott Smart, and that was sponsored by Buick, as heard on ABC. Hope you enjoyed The Fat Man. Let's take a quick break, then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. All right, it's 1:06 in the morning. Thank you, Esmeralda. This is Hour 3 of the WGN Radio Theater. We're here every Saturday and Sunday, so please mark your calendar, 11 p.m. until 2 o'clock in the morning. Thanks for staying up with us. And Lisa and I, we just love doing this show, right? I mean, during the week, we talk about it. We're like, hey, Saturday's
pretty much
coming.
Every hour of every day, we look forward
Saturday's
to the weekend.
Saturday's coming, right.
It's true.
Too bad we can't do this 7 days a week.
Well, maybe five.
Maybe five.
We all need a little, you know, vacation. Yeah.
I, you know, and I really, really and truly mean this. I listen to old-time radio shows every day, every single day.
And you listen to the podcast.
Well, yeah, I listen to the
every
podcast.
Every show.
But I'm constantly, when I'm on the computer working, it's, whatever, yeah. Or if I'm in my car, I'm not listening to the music. I listen to, I Bluetooth classic radio shows.
Actually, the car is a great place to listen to it because you're just driving and it's just a good time to listen to classic radio. It
you
works
know,
for me.
People, there's a big business out there with audiobooks. You know, people
right.
are really into downloading audiobooks from
right.
different
for traveling,
companies and all that.
Yeah.
I can't listen to an audiobook. I just can't. It's just not good. I don't
well,
know. That's
maybe
my opinion.
This is what you're used to, and this is what you appreciate.
Like an audiobook is just a you know a reader. Like, and
it's
then
a reader.
I
yeah.
went down the hall, and I went over, and there was a frog. You know, I mean, it's just like I it just it's
and
just
that
not,
would be.
I don't know. I don't mean to you know be a negative Nelly about it, but I just don't like audiobooks, and everybody loves audiobooks, but these classic radio shows.
Oh, this
Whoa,
is a
way
different ball game.
Because
yeah.
these are there's sound effects and music and full cast. Now I know there are some audiobooks that are full cast, mm-hmm. and those are okay. Listen to those.
Okay.
Yeah, those are fine. But if it's a single reader, ooh.
To be honest, I don't like audiobooks either. Ugh. I prefer holding it in my hand and imagining things.
You just
with
ended
my
up
eyes.
On Nick's mm-hmm. on Nick's thing right there. Inappropriate.
Right there.
Yeah, you just ended up on Nick's thing. But. But yeah, I can't listen to an audiobook. It just, I drive off the road, I'll crash into a tree.
Well, you do that anyways.
Well, yeah. I've been known to do that.
I know that.
In this hour, it's Escape, starring Jeff Chandler. You're going to really like this episode called Snake Doctor, brought to you in part by Cat's Pride. Dum, dum, dum,
dum, dum, dum. It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride.
This actress stars in the upcoming TV series Riverdale, based on the characters from Archie Comics.
Wow.
Yes,
I wonder who
she
she's
will
playing
be
in
there.
This.
And the winner will get a $25 gift certificate for Lumel Nottis.
312-981-7200. Here's a hint. She played Claire in The Breakfast Club.
Look, I'm not going to discuss my private life with total strangers.
All right. She's not. She's absolutely not,
Well,
Lisa.
She's a lot different than you are.
312-981-7200. Who is that actress? Win a Lumel Nottis pizza. We'll be right back.
And we are back. This is the WGN Radio Theater, and we are about to give away a delicious pizza, Lumel Nottis. But first, we're going to play that movie clip again.
Look, I'm not going to discuss my private life with total strangers.
And that's all you get. But we've got Steve on the line from Galesburg. Hi, Steve.
Hi.
That would be John Hughes' pet project, Molly Ringwald.
That is it. Molly Ringwald is the one. I haven't seen her in a while. Has she been in things lately?
I have not either, but she's going to be in this new Archie Comics thing.
She is. So
Very cool.
If we missed her, she's back in action here. Steve, we are so glad to give you a Lou Malnati's gift certificate, home of Chicago's best and most delicious deep dish
Redeem
pizza.
It for a pizza, though. It doesn't taste as good as the pizza.
Well, they have pasta and salads there, too.
No, I mean the gift certificate itself.
Oh.
It's kind of a cardboardy
taste. Yeah,
use
that joke last
taste.
Week. It's, I mean, last
Well,
year.
Hang on a second.
There we go.
There we go.
Steve, you can visit one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations. You can order online at lumelnotties.com, and we hope you have a great pizza on us.
Thanks,
right,
Steve.
Thanks,
buddy.
Thank
Appreciate you.
You
listening. All right, it's time for Escape. I love Escape. It was radio's greatest series of high adventure and mystery. And it ran seven full seasons, 1947 all the way to 1954. William Conrad and Paul Frees were the voices of Escape. They often played roles, too. In fact, they're both in this particular episode. And Escape was a cousin to Suspense, but didn't have the star power or budget of Suspense. And it had very few sponsors. It's really weird, you know, a show this good.
And it ran so many
years.
Yeah,
it didn't. Almost never had a sponsor. And using radio's best supporting actors, Harry Bartell, Joseph Kearns, Ben Wright, John Daner. And the slogan for this series was, "Tired of the everyday grind? Ever dream of a life of romantic adventure? Want to get away from it all?" Notice I lowered my voice to do that.
I didn't notice. No, I thought it was always like
Tired
that.
Of the everyday grind, Lisa.
Are you trying to sound like Roger?
Ever dream of a life of romantic? Yeah. Roger does have a deep voice.
He sure
I'm jealous.
Does.
Yeah. I'm jealous. Okay, it's time for Escape. This stars Jeff Chandler, although he's billed as Ira Grossell, which was his real name. I think he was born Ira Grossell. But listen to the supporting cast in this. Are you ready? William Conrad, Paul Frees, Wilms Herbert, Edgar Barrier. That's some major, major talent, radio talent. This is called Snake Doctor. It's from February 8th, 1948. You will like this episode, I promise. Here's part one of Escape.
Fed up with the shoveling snow? Can't shake that cold of yours? Wonder what the world's coming to?
We offer you Escape.
You are alone in a remote village on the Welsh border, surrounded by silent townspeople who are watching and waiting for you to decide to lose your soul.
Escape, produced and directed by William N. Robeson. And carefully contrived to free you from the four walls of today for a half hour of high adventure.
Tonight we escape to a remote section of Wales and a strange village between two worlds. As Algernon Blackwood described it in his eerie story, Ancient Sorceries.
I had spent a week's vacation in Wales and was returning to London by train when it all began. It was late afternoon. We'd left the Welsh mountains and crossed the border into Western England, passing through a countryside which appeared singularly empty, deserted of life. Over the soft hills and the valleys between hung a faintly perceptible haze, given to the whole landscape a feeling of enchantment and unreality. The train at length slowed down to a stop at a tiny wayside station. As it did so, a sudden thought occurred to me. Why not leave the crowded train with its irritating noises and spend the night in this peaceful spot, then take a slower and emptier train in the morning? On the impulse, I rose from my seat and the man sitting opposite to me said,
"Why, say, sir, we only stop here for a minute or two. If you're thinking of walking about a bit..."
"No, as a matter of fact, I'm getting off here."
"I thought you were going to London."
"I'll go on in the morning. I'm going to stay here for the night."
"I strongly advise you not to."
"I beg your pardon?"
"This is the village of Malton."
"Malton? I've never heard of it.
Few people have, outside. But if you place any value on your soul, you'll not spend the night here.
My dear sir, what are you talking about? Why not?
Because of the sleep. And because of the cats. That's all I can tell you.
You're insane. I'll take my bag if you don't mind.
You're making a terrible mistake. You may not even have the chance to regret it. Don't leave this train. I know what I'm talking about.
No, but utter nonsense.
Don't. Don't, I tell you.
Goodbye. I stood there on the embankment as the train pulled away. What in the world was the matter with the man anyway? Cats, sleep. His words made no sense. I picked up my bag and started walking up the long hill toward the village. And suddenly, for no reason at all, I shivered. Hello? Hello, is anybody here?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't see you at first.
Is there something I can do for you, sir?
Why, yes, I saw your sign outside, the Inn of the Golden Bough. I should like to get a room, please.
You're planning to stay here?
Why, yes.
Very well. You may sign the register. Here.
Thank you. I'm going to catch another train and go on in the morning.
Oh, yes, of course.
There, well.
Arthur Llewellyn. Llewellyn?
Yes, from London.
Arthur Llewellyn. You've been a long time coming back.
What?
But now that you're here, you'll find there are some things that never change.
Madam, I'm afraid I don't know what you're talking about.
You rang, madam?
Where did you come from?
Dundreary, the gentleman would like a room for the night. His name is Arthur Llewellyn.
Aye, so it is. Welcome back to Malton, sir.
What? Why, I knew I'd never been here before. What was it all about? First the man on the train and now these people. Were they crazy or was I? I left the inn and walked along narrow cobbled streets, beneath quaint gables leaning out from the silent shuttered houses, through dappled pools of light and shadow. It gradually dawned upon me that the village of Malton was centuries old, older than any town in England ought to be. And the people I passed now and then were dressed in the fashion of another day. They paid no attention to me. They went silently about their own business. Yes, that was it. That's what I'd been noticing. Silently. They came and went with only soft padding sounds to mark their passing, as though they walked in shoes with soles of velvet. When I stopped, there was no sound. The silence was unbroken. I hurried on through the streets and came at last to the far side of the village, to a place where the hill broke away sharply from a low, flat wall of stone, perhaps a rampart once. I sat down upon it, and the dreamy, lazy somnolence of the place stole over me. Presently, I don't know how much later, I became aware of the sound of weird music rising out of the vale below me. I looked down from the rampart. The sunken plain at the bottom melted away into a sea of gathering shadow, blurred in a swirl of thickening mist. I thought of dead trees swept by the night wind, of animals with half-human voices singing to a white moon, of the wailing of cats on the roof tiles at night, of unearthly creatures far off in the sky calling to one another in chorus. I felt my heart beat faster and faster, felt the vague stirrings of some urge inside of me, trying to answer the awful call of that music. I fought against the feeling, fought against myself. And even as I did, I found I was staring down into that valley, peering desperately into the dark mist, trying to see, I don't know what. And then suddenly, music ended. I stood on the rampart alone, dusk fallen around me, and the early night wind moaned with a chill breath. Quick terror rose up in me. I turned and ran through the darkened streets, ran with my heart pounding, dodging at shadows, through one dim alley after another, and arrived at last panting and almost breathless at the door of the Golden Bar.
Been a long time returning, Mr. Llewellyn. It's past 7.
Oh, yes, yes. I guess I walked farther than I meant to. I didn't realize it was so late.
You heard the music, didn't you?
Yes. Strangest music I've ever heard. How did you know? Who plays it, anyway?
Then you didn't remember it?
No. Why should I? The thing was becoming irritating, this quiet insistence that I was someone else. I went into my lonely dinner and ate as quickly as possible. Then, taking the candle Dundreary gave me, I crossed the lobby, climbed the stairs behind the desk, and walked past silent doors down the long empty hall that led to my room at the end. I was halfway to my door when suddenly the flame of my candle went out. I stood stock still in the pitch blackness, fumbling for a match. At that moment, I knew that someone or something was there with me in the darkness. I held my breath and listened. There was no sound, no movement. I reached out and felt the wall and moved along it, feeling my way in the inky blackness. It was then I touched it. Near my face, another soft, warm, yielding. And alive. Who? What is it?
It is I, Ilsa.
And who?
Ilsa. Don't you remember me, Arthur?
No.
But wouldn't you like to remember me? Don't you want to see me again? To look at me? Now?
I don't know.
But not tonight, Arthur. Perhaps tomorrow. Tomorrow.
I stumbled blindly through the door of my room and shut it behind me. I lit the candle and flung myself across the bed. The room was small, with one shuttered window, and the light of the flame flickered on the walls and ceiling. I stared at the hand that had touched her out there in the dark hall. I lifted it up to my face and smelled of the barbaric scent that still clung to my fingers. Was evil, maddening. The candle sputtered and burned, and the melted minutes dripped away. Who was I? Who were these people? Who was Ilsa? I fell asleep finally and dreamed of soft moving creatures and the silence of life in a dim, muffled world devoid of all feeling but ecstasy. And I dream, too, of cats.
You slept quite late this morning, Mr. Llewellyn.
Huh? Oh, morning, Dundreary. I felt as if I'd been drugged.
The night air here in Morton is very conducive to sleep.
I'd meant to catch the morning train for London. Now it's too late.
What a terrible shame.
Oh, by the way, Dundreary.
Yes, Mr. Llewellyn?
I was wondering if you'd know anyone by the name of Ilsa.
Ilsa happens to be my daughter, Mr. Llewellyn.
Oh, I didn't hear you come in.
I hope you were able to sleep well. Without any unpleasant dreams?
I guess so.
I'm so happy to hear it. Perhaps then you may decide to stay with us for a long time.
That's very kind of you.
No, it isn't kindness, Mr. Llewellyn. But all of us are hoping that you may decide soon.
Decide? Decide what?
That is Paul Frees there. He was Boris Badenoff on the Rocky and Bullwinkle. We were talking about Rocky and Bullwinkle earlier. That's part one of Snake Doctor on Escape. Ira Grossell, of course, that was Jeff Chandler doing the narrating on this episode. Let's take a quick break, then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. Welcome back to the show. I'm your host, Carl Amari. Lisa Wolf is here, and it's time for more classic radio. We have to get right back into this. Escape, broadcast February 8th, 1948. Here's part two, the conclusion now, of Snake Doctor on Escape.
It was no use. None of them would answer my questions. They seemed to think I should know already. I left the inn as soon as I'd eaten, walked around the streets of the village, and I began to notice that I was never completely alone. If I turned down an empty street, someone always stepped from a doorway or entered from the opposite end. Wherever I went, within 5 minutes, a dozen people were strolling near me. And I realized these people were watching me, tensely, as a cat watches a mouse or another cat.
It's quite fortunate you came back early, Mr. Llewellyn. Your dinner this evening is a rather special one.
Special? What do you mean by that?
You are to have a guest.
Huh? Who?
An old friend. She's coming now.
The girl who came toward us across the room was lithe and slim, and she moved with the sinuous grace of a young panther. She was lovely, exotic, and terrifyingly beautiful.
I present Mr. Arthur Llewellyn, Miss Ilse. He's been with us for 2 days.
Yes, I know. My mother told me. May I sit down, Mr. Llewellyn?
Hmm? Oh, yes, please do. Here, permit me.
Thank you. You may serve us, Dunreary.
Thank you, Miss Ilse.
Then you're Ilse?
Yes. Don't you remember me, Arthur?
From last night. It was you, well, last night, wasn't it?
Yes. And other nights. Can't you remember all the other nights?
No. No.
Then we shall have to try that much harder. It's been such a very long time.
Please, Ilse, what is it all of you talk about? I don't understand any of it.
You will, Arthur. Unless you leave, of course. Weren't you planning to take a train to London in the morning?
Yes. No, I've changed my mind.
I'm glad you did. We'll try to make you happy here, my mother and I. And then perhaps you'll stay a long, long time.
No. I must leave for sure in a day or two.
Suppose we wait and see. And meanwhile, if there's anything you want, all you have to do is ask me.
All right. Why don't you tell me about...
Yes, Arthur. About what?
No, I don't want to know. I don't want you to tell me. Suddenly I realized I was afraid to know. Afraid. I should leave now, but I couldn't leave. It was Ilse. She attracted, repelled, fascinated, and horrified me. All in single flashes of blasting emotion. I felt the presence of a great gray curtain ready to roll back at any moment and leave me on the brink of an awful adventure. I knew the village held its breath, watched and waited, and then on the evening of the fifth day, the whole ghastly secret exploded into hideous life. After dinner, Ilse had asked me to walk with her. It was the first time I'd been outside the inn after dark. We walked through the village in the moonlight, saying little, and came finally to the stone rampart above the sunken plain. We were quite alone.
Look, Arthur.
Hmm?
It's a full moon tonight. Do you know what that means?
Yes. It means I can see more clearly how beautiful you are.
Do you really believe that? Do you think I'm beautiful?
Like a soft, sleek leopard in a warm jungle of shadows. But wait, I'll see you even better in a moment.
Arthur, what are you doing?
These dry leaves by the wall, they'll make an excellent bonfire. There, you see?
No. No.
What's wrong?
The fire. No, Arthur, put it out.
All right, Ilse. Don't worry. It's all right. Hardly had a chance to get started. There, you see, it's all out.
Yes, I see.
Ilse, why did it bother you so much?
Don't you remember? Don't you remember the fire?
No. What fire?
No. Don't talk of it. Look at me instead. Look at me, Arthur.
Yes, Ilse.
Arthur, do you love me?
Yes. Yes, Ilse, I love you. I love you and I want you.
I'm glad. That means you'll come back to us, then?
I don't know what you mean, Ilse.
You can know everything. Tonight, if you want to.
Yes, I do, I do.
You must know a part of it already. Down inside. You must remember some of it, don't you?
Yes. It's like something buried for centuries inside of me, and now it's beginning to come alive.
Let it come alive. Don't fight against it. You belonged to us once long ago, and you still belong.
Yes, I seem to know that.
That's why you came back. You heard them calling. You heard me calling. And you came seeking the old life again.
Yes, but Ilse... Ilse, I'm afraid.
Are you afraid of me? Look at me.
Ilse...
Kiss me.
Ilse...
Will you live the old life again with me tonight?
Yes, yes.
I've known that you would because I own you, Arthur. You belong to me and I want you and I shall never let you escape from me again.
Yes, yes.
Go back to the inn then. Wait for me, Arthur. I shall come for you. Tonight.
Back at the inn, I paced the floor of my room. A tense, uncontrollable excitement driving me along in a nervous frenzy. The dry crypt of memory broke open and all the things I'd hidden away for centuries poured into my consciousness. I knew now why I'd come here. I knew what I was going to do. And I knew that I was lost. I sensed the rising stir of movement throughout the inn and outside in the courtyard below my window. I knew what to expect when I threw open the shutter. From every window of the inn and from those of the houses about the court were leaping great monstrous beasts with soft dark fur and eyes that gleamed with eerie phosphorescence. Cats. Cats of human size. This then was the secret of Molten. Lycanthropy. The witchcraft of centuries long dead and buried. The half-human cries floated up to me and the moon cast their dark shadows on the ground as they padded across the courtyard and vanished through the narrow streets of the village, heading for a hideous rendezvous. This is what I'd been. This is what I wanted to be now. I scarcely heard the door of my room open behind me.
Are you ready, my lord? Shall we join them?
Ilse.
Here, Arthur. The sacred balm. Made of vervain and mistletoe. And blind things out of the sea. Remember?
Yes. Yes, I remember.
Take it. Use it. We'll change now. Transform. Leap from the window and join them. Lead us again, Arthur.
Yes. But not here, Ilse. Not yet. Wait until we get there. Then we'll change.
If you wish. Come then, Arthur, to the stone wall above the grove. That's where we'll change, on the stone rampart.
In the Croven, the sunken plain beneath the wall, insane shadows writhed in the moonlight and postured in the luminous mist. A thousand of the Devil's Own were dancing in the unearthly music born from the harmony of the Black Sacrifice, crying out in delirious abandon, calling to the thing that now lived inside of me and struggled, screaming in my skull, trying to answer them back. I fought against them, fought against Ilsa, pleading and clinging with her soft arms about my neck.
Now, Arthur, come with me now if you love me.
I love you, but I can't do it. I can't do it. Not again.
Yes, my love, only an instant of change, and then we'll live forever.
Is it living without a soul,
Does
Ilsa?
Does it matter when I'm here?
No, once before I escaped, but I can never escape again. This time there'd be no turning back.
Am I not worth it? Look at me, my love.
I clung to the very edge of my sanity, fought that I would not be lost and damned forever, and at this moment I knew what I could do.
Arthur, wait. What are you doing?
I found a match in my pocket, struck it, dropped it into the dry leaves that lay banked across the whole length of the stone wall.
No. No, Arthur, don't.
Yes.
I can't come to you through the fire. You're driving me away.
Yes. Go, Ilsa. Go into the valley. Goodbye, Ilsa. Goodbye.
You fool.
I turned from the wall of flame that for a few minutes would shut me off from the valley, ran through the moonlight streets, not back toward the Inn of the Golden Bough, but down the long road that led away from that cursed village of Malton.
Well, Mr. Llewellyn, I find this one of the most interesting cases of hallucination I've encountered since I began the practice of psychiatry.
I tell you, it really happened, Doctor.
And having investigated your story a bit during the past week, I'm in a position now to answer most of the questions that have been worrying you since you came back to London.
What do you mean, investigated?
I went up to Hereford and looked over some of the old records there. Then I motored over to Malton for a couple of hours.
Well, then you know it's all true. You saw it. You know I was there.
Oh, there's no question but what you were there, Mr. Llewellyn. The lady who runs the inn showed me your name in the register. Said you left suddenly without taking your luggage or paying your bill. She was really quite put out.
I see. Well, what of the records, Doctor, the ones you spoke of?
I think they really explain the whole thing, Mr. Llewellyn. It seems that during the 14th century, the village of Malton became a kind of headquarters in that part of the country for the practice of witchcraft.
Yes. Yes, go on.
Numerous trials were held there in the late 1300s, and a great many men and women were convicted of sorcery and burned to death.
Yes?
In the records of a trial in 1372, I found the name of an Arthur Llewellyn and of Ilsa and her mother.
That proves it, then.
It proves a clear case of hallucination. You knew that story before you went there. Not consciously, but somewhere deep in your latent memory.
I knew nothing about it before.
That man was an ancestor of yours. The story must be known in your family. When you arrived in Malton, accidentally, the association of the name just pulled the trigger, and your imagination did the rest.
Yes, but Doctor, my parents died when I was four. I've never been around any of my family ever.
No matter. You see, a childhood memory is amazingly persistent at times.
Yes. Yes. I suppose it is. I knew then what I had to do. The only thing I could do. There'd be no use in talking further with the doctor. He'd find some phrase of science to cover everything. He'd even try to explain away the mark I still carried across my shoulder where Ilsa had thrown her arm about me in those last mad minutes on the rampart. A mark that was covered with soft gray fur like the fur of a cat. I knew now what had to be done and what must be done while I still retained my sanity. One last act, final and irrevocable.
An act that begins by walking into the railway station at Charing Cross.
Good evening, sir. May I help you?
Yes. I'd like a ticket to Malton, please.
Malton? I don't believe I...
It's a little village on the Swansea line near the border of Wales.
Oh, yes. Here it is. I don't believe I've ever sold a ticket to Malton before.
I don't doubt it.
Let's see. 4 and 6, single fare, first class. Did you wish a return trip, sir, or one way? What did you say?
Oh, I'm sorry. Make it one way.
Escape is produced and directed by William N. Robeson. And tonight brought you Ancient Sorceries by Algernon Blackwood, adapted for radio by Les Crutchfield, with Paul Frees as Arthur Llewellyn, Kay Brinker as Ilsa, Anne Morrison as Madam, and William Conrad as the Doctor. Music is conceived and conducted by Cy Fuhrer. Next week, we bring you another exciting story of high adventure. Good night, then, until the same time next week, when once again we offer you Escape. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
That's Escape, although we're a little embarrassed because that is not Snake Doctor. Somehow the wrong show was loaded into the system. We just listened to Ancient Sorceries, and that is from a broadcast date of February 15th, 1948. The star was Paul Frees on that episode of Escape. Sorry, we will reschedule Snake Doctor for you, starring Jeff Chandler. Apologize for that. Let's take a quick break, then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. Well, next week, Lisa, we're going to do something different next week. We're going to play classic radio shows.
Nice.
Yeah, thought we'd just mix it up.
But it will be different.
Change it up a little. Next week, what do we have?
We've got Boston Blackie, Duffy's Tavern, and Cavalcade of America. That's on Saturday night at 11, and on Sunday at 11, we've got The Halls of Ivy, Broadway Is My Beat, and Inner Sanctum Mystery is a personal favorite.
What are we listening to here? Sounds like...
Ella's is going crazy over here.
It's Blackstreet
with... Of course it is.
No Diggity.
Got it?
No Diggity.
No Diggity.
No Diggity Diggity Dog. And that's kind of wacky.
I know, syncopation.
Yeah. We have Nick DiGilio in the studio with us here, buddy. What's up, Nick?
How are you?
We're listening to some, what was that we were
listening to? Blackstreet, No Diggity.
Oh,
man.
No Diggity.
Come on.
No Diggity, Diggity, Dog.
It's mid-90s fly jams right there, man.
Wow, Nick, you know your stuff.
Yeah.
And what else do they play that I should know?
Nothing.
Actually, that was really good, though. I would listen to that.
Well, that's just a portion of the song.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an actual song.
And it was like sounding like a new song
that
was coming on.
It
yeah,
was
is that what it was?
Yeah.
All right, yeah. I'm pretty loopy. Myself.
Yes,
it's getting late. I'm kind of loopy. What's your schedule? When you get off the air at 5 in the morning, what do you do?
I usually get home around 6.
Do you go to bed right away or you stay up?
I'm usually up till about 11.
Okay, and then?
And then I sleep.
Yeah.
Get up, have something to eat, watch a little TV, and then usually
have some spam.
Take a nap.
Because remember, Nick said he likes spam.
Spam rules.
Oh, my gosh. I'm going to try it, though. You said just
make... Yeah, how is it that you've reached the age that you're at and you've never had spam?
106. I've never had spam.
Well, I'm with him. Never had it.
But here's the
thing. How is that possible?
Yeah.
But Nick said, don't eat the flavored spam.
No
bacon
flavor.
Eat the regular spam.
No. Don't eat the turkey spam.
Yeah.
Or the light. If there was bacon spam, you should eat that.
Yeah.
Anything with bacon in it, you should eat.
Right. Of course.
But regular spam is the best spam, but not that light crap and that turkey stuff.
No, I don't want the light spam. If I'm going to have spam, I'm going all in with the spam. So what's up, man? What's on the show tonight?
Movie reviews. Lots of movies came out this week, so we're going to review all the big ones.
Okay.
And then Eric Childress, who is one of the guys who reviews movies with me, he's at Sundance, at the Sundance Film Festival, and he goes every year. And he is going to give us a live report from Utah, talking about some of the movies that he's seen at the Sundance.
How many shows has he seen there?
He usually averages, he's usually there 6 days when he goes every year. He sees between 30 and 35 movies.
That's fantastic.
I had a movie that I produced open the Sundance Film Festival years ago called Madison.
Yeah.
Jim Caviezel in it.
Yep.
And you know what the other two movies at the time that were there? Christopher Nolan's movie, Memento.
Memento, sure.
It got to meet Christopher Nolan. He wasn't Christopher Nolan then, you know, it was his first movie. And then the other one, there was three movies that opened, you know, the festival each day. Madison was one. And then the other one was Donnie Darko.
Yeah.
Donnie Darko.
Great movie.
Yeah, with Jake Gyllenhaal,
Gyllenhaal.
Yeah.
Richard Kelly directed that
and
movie.
And then the other one, there was one other, In the Bedroom. Those were the four films. So it's quite an array.
Well, I mean, Sundance has gotten to the point now where, like, major movies debut there.